Okay, this is Terry from Colorado. I'm also known as KI0RE. This is the NLA Hams Net. We hold this net every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and everyone is invited. Our normal topics are anything to do with the NLA or ham radio. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the electromagnetic spectrum and a little bit about electricity itself. So we kind of were just discussing before we started the difference between electrons moving through a conductor of some kind or some kind of conduit, which is usually wires, but it can be a dielectric in the case of lightning. That's what you have. As versus an electromagnetic field, which doesn't necessarily have electrons, but the field, the electromagnetic field, is moving through space near the speed of light. So, are we back to the same page? Does anybody have any questions yet? Okay, so I want to define current as the movement of electrons through a wire. And in the book, the ham radio license manual for HEC that ARL puts out on page 3-2, there's a little thing there, and it helps to think about it as water. There's a pump, and then the output of the pump goes around in a hose, and a hose is connected back to the beginning of the pump. And if it's full of water and you turn the pump on, it will push water all in that circle, and it will eventually heat up, and it won't last very long, so the analogy falls down. But I wanted to get that idea that circuits that we do, the radios that we use, somehow move electrons in a conductor. And the picture on page 3-2, which is figure 3.1, has the pump. It has a picture of a battery, a circuit going through an ammeter, and the voltage. Voltage you can think of as the pressure on that, the pressure that the pump puts on that hose, that circuit of hose. And you measure the pressure differential from where the pump outputs to where it's pulling back in. And that's the pressure. That's equivalent, not equivalent, but analogous to the voltage. And then you have a flow meter out somewhere on that loop that measures how much water is flowing past a single point. And that's analogous to a current meter measuring the amperes, how many electrons are passing that point in any given period of time. And usually you use 1 second and 1 coulomb of electrons that go by, and it's not exactly 1 coulomb. It's something different, and I forget all of that, and it's not important for this current talk. The only thing else that we have is resistance. Resistance is like pinching the hose off. If you've ever had a garden hose that was pumping out, the water was coming out, and then you put a kink in the hose, you're building resistance into that, and then only part of the electrons could get through. That's resistance. Everything has resistance. And resistance kind of reduces the flow of electricity past a certain point. And there's ways to put it together. It reduces the flow. All right. To get back to where we were talking about, we're talking about electricity going through a conductor. And the way we do that for ham radio is we build an antenna, and we send electrons out that antenna. and the difference between what's going out the antenna and the ground generates that magnetic wave. You kind of, as electricity is, as electrons are going up there, they move the electrical field around them, and then when they come back down, it moves them the other way, and you're generating this electromagnetic field, which is what you were talking about, Helena. Okay, is everybody with me? Because I kind of overstepped that a little bit to adjust it for tonight's discussion. Everybody with me?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay, good. All right, so I want to talk about capacitance and inductance just a little bit. So please bear with me. I want you to ask questions because this is a very difficult topic to discuss over a telephone line with just voice. But I want to get the idea across that an inductor kind of saves up and stores a magnetic field. And a capacitor saves up a current or an electron field, a static charge. It saves up a static, it stores an electron charge. So let's start with the capacitor. It's a little easier to understand. If you're putting electrons in the capacitor says, oh, boy, I love electric charges. Give me all you got. Give me all you got. Any capacitor, you could build a capacitor just by a couple of layers of aluminum foil and separated by some kind of dielectric. As a matter of fact, there in early days, you had strips of magnetic foil or dielectric that were wrapped and dipped in wax, and that was a capacitor. And one wire would go to one, so you'd actually have two conductors inside, and you'd make a sandwich out of it with dielectric in the middle. And you'd start rolling that up, and you'd have another dielectric on top, I guess, to keep the, and as you rolled it up, the conductors were separated by that dielectric. And a capacitor will take in all kinds of water. It'll take in all kinds of electrons until it gets full up. And for any given capacitor, it has a limit on how many electrons before it starts saying, look, I got enough electrons, I don't want any more. So in the beginning, when you first put a circuit or put a capacitor into a circuit, it begins to let electrons flow all over. And what it's doing is taking them out of one side and it's storing them up in the other. And the electrons want to jump across that gap on the dielectric, but they can't. If you push it enough with a high enough pressure, i.e. voltage, it will eventually break down because everything has a breakdown limit, and it will blow it up. And then it lets all the smoke out, and of course it's no good after you let all the smoke out. That's a joke. So this capacitor at first looks like a short, and lots of current flows in, lots of electrons. The current flows into the capacitor until a capacitor gets fully charged, and then you have an exponential curve that as it tries to put more, for a given voltage, as it tries to put in more and more electrons, the capacitor says, I'm not taking any more. He says, I'm all filled up. Now, if you take the leads on a capacitor and you touch them together, you get a big spark because it will try and discharge all that charge once you connect one side to the other side. There's some little bitty helicopters and little bitty cars and you know, toys that when you charge them up, you're actually charging a capacitor, and then there's enough resistance that it slowly discharges that capacitor until it doesn't work anymore, and then you got to charge it up again. I've seen that. I've got one of those little toys that was given to me on Christmas. I said, well, this is cool. So anyway, so the capacitor gets up a charge, until it gets full, and then it waits. It holds that charge until it discharges. This is why capacitors can be very dangerous, because you can have a piece of equipment that's running, and then you turn it off, and even though you turn it off and pull the plug, there might be a capacitor in there that's still charged. And that's very dangerous, because if you short the terminals on that, you'll get a big spark. Whatever charge is on it, it's coming out, and it's coming out right now. And you kind of got to watch for that. Now, I want to go to the other side, a coil. A coil is just a piece of wire wound in a circle around, say, a wooden bar or a steel bar or an iron bar or any kind of iron. You can just make a loop in the air. That's a coil. It has a definite value. Now, what coils do is they store a magnetic charge or a magnetic field charge. So there's a magnetic field built up around them. And coils, when you first put them into an electric circuit, they will resist the flow of electricity. And as you get more and more built up, slowly, it allows a little more and a little more and a little more current. All of a sudden, you will have a constant flow of electrons in there. You'll have this nice big field, depending upon the voltage, that's built up because electrons are flowing through that coil. And there's a big electronic field around it. And that big electronic field will try and continue to go. And when you disconnect it from the circuit, it will attempt to push that magnetic field and keep pushing it. And as it begins to collapse, because of the way it's structured, it will tend to continue to push electrons out that wire as it discharges. Again, used to be you had what's called a flyback transformer in old TV sets when you had an electron tube. Well, that old flyback transformer would have a little bit of electricity still left in it. And the first thing you had to do was discharge that guy, and don't touch anything, but discharge that guy, or you're liable to get a 25,000-volt zap, because that's what it took to pull electrons along that video tube. So what can we do with this? So you have a capacitor that when you first put it into a circuit, the electrons start flowing like crazy. And you have a coil that when you first put it in the circuit, it resists voltage, but once the circuit's built up, it'll sit there and it loves it. It lets the current through no problem. What happens if you put the two together? I want to wire them up in what's called parallel. So I'm going to wire two of the wires together, one from the inductor, the coil, and one from the capacitor, and I wire them together. And then on the other end, I wire those together so that they are connected. Does everybody understand what I'm saying, or do I need to clarify?
No, it's good.
Okay, so now I take my battery, and I'm going to put it on those two end wires that are wound together. What's going to happen? Anybody want to hazard a guess, Jan?
It'll oscillate.
What happens is that as you put the battery on, as you turn it, I got a switch, I turn it on and it's connected to the battery. The capacitor charges up, and it gets to the full point and it quits going. Well, what's it going to do? It's going to say, wait, I have a path through the conductor back to my other side. So so it's going to start pushing that out, and it pushes it right through the conductor. Well, the conductor's going to get to a point where the magnetic, you know, electric current is flowing opposite of what, or the, let's see, how does that work? The capacitor charges up to the other side and says, I'm not taking any more. At that point, it stops going. It wants to slow down, or not slow down, but stop the current. But it can't, because this capacitor is charging it, and then the magnetic field collapses, and it tries to push as much as it can into the capacitor. The field's totally collapsed in the inductor. But the capacitor is charged up the other direction. So what happens? It starts flowing back through the conductor. It builds the electric field up in the opposite direction and starts charging up the capacitor again. This is what's called a tank circuit. And it does just what Jan said it does. It starts oscillating. It goes back and forth and back and forth. The current at any place in that circuit is flowing one direction one time and another direction at a different time. And it sits there and goes back and forth. Why is this important? That's one way to get an AC wave. An AC is a little different. Now, if we take that and run it out through some circuitry and control it and shape the wave, you get a nice, pretty sine wave. And usually you have ground. Ground is connected somewhere. And then the other part of the antenna goes up a wire. So let's say we just have a vertical antenna. And the electrons are effectively going back and forth between a ground or a ground plane and the antenna. And when the electrons are going one way, it's going up the antenna. And when it's going the other way, it comes down the antenna. Well, if you have a whole bundle of electrons going up the antenna, you've just distorted the magnetic field in a certain way. And then when that batch of electrons, the whole tank circuit reverses, it pulls all that batch of electrons back down the antenna, you've distorted the magnetic field in the opposite direction. Now, I'm simplifying this. I'm not telling you everything about magnetic field and the right-hand rule and all of that stuff, because you don't need to worry about it. You just need to get the idea. Why is that important? Because you have to have an oscillating current like that, which is called an alternating current, or AC, or you don't get radio waves. You don't get them. Because unless they're moving up and down that antenna, and antennas vary in size and shape, and they do funny things when you do different things. But unless you get a varying set of electrons going up and down that antenna, you're not going to generate a magnetic or an electromagnetic wave that goes out through space. And that RF that you wanted to talk about, Helena, is generated because you've got a tank circuit of some kind, and that's the simplest form, and it's analog, it's not digital. And it's the current is going one way one time and another way the other time. And that forces a packet of electrons or some electrons to gather at the top of the antenna and then form to come all the way back down the antenna. That distorts the electromagnetic field immediately around the antenna, and that field is then propagated. And it gets less, let's see, how do I say that? It decays in strength as you get away from the antenna. That is the essence of what we're talking about here when we're talking RF. Does all that make sense, Selena?
The only thing that I have, well, no, I have a couple questions, but the most important thing is, remember the old transistor radios and you pulled out the antenna and you turned the knob on and it was powered by either AC, you plug it into a wall, or you have batteries and I'm riding along the school bus. You know, I'm 12 years old, and I pulled out the antenna, and I'm listening to the radio. When I touch that antenna, after I turn the batteries on, and I hear my local oldie station, I didn't get zapped because electricity or electrons are running up and down that antenna. So
no, you didn't, because that's a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Did I miss something?
Yeah, but so there is no current going up and down or electrons going up and down that antenna?
There is. There is.
And
it's,
how come
it's being,
doesn't my skin?
But it's not strong enough. It's very, very, very small. Remember I said the further you get away? I was talking about a transmitting antenna. That's how the electromagnetic waves are generated. What you're talking about is the electromagnetic wave after, you know, somebody's got their transistor radio across town, and they turn it on, and they can hear the station that you're putting out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as that comes in, it's very much, the power is very much degraded by 1 over the square of the distance. And it's the inverse square law is what it is. And that's not very much current. And what you do when you touch it, you put about a 600-ohm load to ground right there. And that is not enough for the deviations in the electromagnetic field to go through and get into the radio. You're essentially grounding that antenna. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but the oldie station doesn't really didn't vary, even though it might have been a cheapy $15 Kmart radio. It still, you know, held the tone, and the oldies kept on singing, even though I was pulling, see if I can pull the antenna out further or shoving it back in. You know?
Right, because the transmitter is working just fine.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that you touched it at your receiver. Remember last week I talked about you had to have a sender and a receiver? Well, the radio station is your sender, and they're putting their signal up in a big tower, and the electron field is being distorted at a certain frequency and modulated and all that stuff, and it's coming down to your radio. Your radio is built to turn that disturbance in the electromagnetic field into something that's an audio signal that you can hear with your ears. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it now.
Okay.
You know,
and so when you touched it, I'm sorry, go ahead.
If I could just add a thing. Sometimes, like in my shop, I have a crummy little old radio in there, and I want to listen to a station that's very far away, and the signal is very weak. And sometimes, depending on what shoes you're wearing and so on, how well grounded you are, you can walk over and touch the antenna, and you become part of the antenna. And if you hold your arms out straight, you'll pick up the signal better, which indicates the antenna should be longer if you're going to listen to that. So I'll go get a clip lead and a 3-foot, 6-foot piece of wire and clip it on there, and then it comes in fine. So the energy is there, but it's not strong enough that I can feel it. And if I have insulated shoes on, I don't ground it out and so on. So you can become part of the antenna or not. The energy is very, very small. Now, by the same token, a friend of mine worked in Argentia, Newfoundland, when he was in the Navy at a Dewline station, and they're transmitting radar all the time at very high levels. And although they never felt it, they would wear neon bulbs with just the two wires sticking out and not hooked to anything in their hats. And so everybody would watch everybody else's hats, and if that bulb lit up, that meant there was stray energy running around the building they were working in, and they'd shut down the transmitter immediately, because although they didn't feel it, it was there, and it would begin to toast them. That's why you tend to feel warm. That's why a microwave works. You get enough energy. So
you're going to have to send me the link where I can buy one of them there things from Amazon, because I'm lighting up all the time.
Oh, a neon bulb, you can buy them at any audio parts store, you know, like Radio Shack used to be, if you still have one.
A neon bulb at Home Depot.
Yeah, you probably can.
They've given me cataracts so badly, so I ain't driving. So it has to be Amazon or Amazon. So someone would be kind enough to send me a link with leads on this neon light bulb. I would really, really appreciate it.
Just look up NE2D from about 65 years ago in a Google it on Amazon. You ought to be able to find it.
It's called NE2D.
Yeah.
N as in so Nancy, 2, D as in David, E as in Edward.
N-E as Nancy N-E. Echo, and then 2D.
Oh, okay.
You'll probably
got it
find
back.
Other versions, too.
Okay, got it.
They light up at about 50 volts.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
What you got to realize is that this signal is very, very small. That's why when Jan reaches up the antenna and holds on to it, his body acts like another antenna, depending upon if he's grounded well, if his shoes are grounding him or not. And so he can actually hold his arm up and get a better reception. And that he's acting like another piece of the antenna, and that's where he knows to go and get another 6-8 foot length and clip it onto the antenna and make it a little longer so it has more more of a place to get irradiated. But it makes you appreciate that little transistor radio that came in the late 50s there was quite an interesting little tool because it could amplify the signal very, very much. Back in the early part of the 20th century, in the 1900s, 19-teens, that was one of the problems they had. They could hear the signals, but even the strongest of the signals, they could barely hear it. They could hear it, but it was very, very weak and hard to hear, and they had to wear headphones, couldn't put it on a speaker. And then Armstrong and some others came up with ways to build amplifiers. And that's where you get up with a super heterodyne receiver. It amplified the signal so much. And then when transistors came along, the Japanese figured out a way to put the transistors in there and amplify that tiny, tiny little signal so much that you could hear it on a speaker. And the battery was driving that speaker and the rest of the electronics in the radio. And it's amazing that they could pull that signal out of the air on a particular frequency, and you could hear it as mainly music, maybe a little static. Okay, did you have another question, Helena, or did that answer it?
Well, I actually muted myself. I'm sitting outside because the stray cats are trying to have chicken dinner here in my yard, and I have a train going past. So, no, I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Well, we kind of got to start winding down here. We're getting close to the end. But I wanted to get you thinking about the idea. You can look up tank circuits and oscillating circuits in YouTube or any kind of electronics book, and you'll find that I've really, really simplified what's happening with the tank circuit, that you have capacitance and inductance, and you also have an inherent resistance inside that tank circuit. And the more resistance, the less precise frequency it is. But for any given, assuming in a perfect world with where the resistance is low, for any given value of a capacitor and an inductor, you come out with a particular frequency that tank circuit is on. And used to, all tank circuits are that way. Well, we come into the digital age, and we have phase-lock loops and variable frequency oscillators and things like that that do it now a little differently than that. But you'll still find tank circuits in almost everything that you have. And I didn't get into a lot of that. We don't need to. But I just wanted to get the idea that it's that packet moving up on a transmitter. It's that packet of electrons moving up. The opposite is true up and down that antenna. The opposite is true on the receiver. The electromagnetic field that comes whizzing by an antenna affects the electrons inside the antenna, driving them up or driving them down. And they're, the circuit in that radio is listening to which way the electrons are moving and how fast they're moving. And it passes what it finds into some circuits that demodulate that at a particular frequency, and then changes it eventually to audio or whatever it's supposed to be decoded as, because it depends upon what it was as it was encoded. It decodes it properly, and that's what makes the signal on your radio. So we talked last week about senders and receiver. The sender is the radio station that's transmitting. In cases of like an AM station or an FM station, they are broadcasting to anyone that wants to turn on a receiver to their frequency, and they can listen. So you got a sender, the radio station. You have a receiver, the little radio that you have, or the big radio that you have, that's got an antenna up to receive that, the distortions of the magnetic field that are coming across at a particular frequency. And then it decodes that and says, okay, on this frequency, with this type of modulation, here's the signal I'm getting off. It changes it into an audible signal by using a speaker, which merely vibrates its tone, vibrating back and forth. It turns it back into compression waves that we hear as sound, and you hear whatever the radio station is transmitting. So we have a sender and a receiver. We have our medium is the electromagnetic spectrum, the EMS that you were talking about, Helena. That's moving. It's moving as electrical waves or electromagnetic waves. They're mainly magnetic. You can consider it electrical because the magnetic field is moving electrons. But to move at the speed of light or near the speed of light, it's not really moving the electrons. It's moving the electromagnetic spectrum over an area of a volume of some form. And then you have noise. On AM radio, that's static crashes from lightning. You could have a refrigerator that turns on. An old car radio, sometimes they didn't filter it right, and you could get ignition noise over the radio. And there's all kinds of other noise that comes in, but you still have the same elements of any communication that we talked about last week. Okay, any final questions or comments, please call now.
The only thing that I would like to maybe talk about some other time is compression. You said compression, and those compression waves are moving my teeth and involuntarily other parts of my body. So I'd like to talk to the force. There's a force there. There's compression waves that don't come out as sound or as noise or as electricity, but as a force, as a kinetic energy. And
well, compression waves that I was talking about are the normal audio sound waves that come out and radiate out from whatever's making the noise. For us, it's our mouth and our vocal cords and our windpipe.
I understand now what you're saying. The waves are compressed. They oscillate back and forth.
Right.
I understand. I was going one step, maybe two steps beyond that. Thanks, Terry. I really appreciate it.
Okay, no problem. So I can talk about that a little, but that's about all I know right off. But anyway, absence any other comments or suggestions or questions, please call now. Hearing none, I'm going to close the net because we reached our time. This has been Terry from Colorado. I'm KIZERO-RE. And this is the NLA Hamsnet. It's held every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We talk about things in L.A. and having to do with NLA and hams, and we welcome anybody that wants to participate. You don't have to be a ham, and you don't have to be an NLA member. You're welcome to call in now. And with that, I'm going to close the net, and I thank you very much for all your participation. It was a great talk tonight, and I really appreciate everybody's input. It's KI0RE. The net is now closed.